And, of course, this is the interactive portion of the program. We're going to take your calls with Ronnie Cummins as we talk about his quest to save the planet. Jump aboard when we come back. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Ronnie Cummins with us. His book is called Grassroots Rising. Theoretically, Ronnie, if they did everything in your book, what would happen?
Well, I talk about in the book how we need to convert about a quarter of U.S. farmland, pasture land, forest land to regenerative practices. What that would do is cancel out all the greenhouse gas emissions that are heating up the climate, so we would start to stabilize the climate. But a lot more would happen. We would have a healthier food system. We'd have better economic opportunities in rural areas. We'd have a restoration of our environment, cleaner water, and so on. So it's a win-win situation to change our food and farming system back to the way it used to be, utilizing some of the modern organic regenerative practices that we've discovered since then. And, you know, in economic terms, it would pay for itself. And that's why I think we've got so many people. The nice thing about the regenerative food and farming movement is we have Republicans, we have Democrats, we have independents, we have libertarians, rural people, urban people. Food is something that can bring us all together. And those of us who live in rural areas in America, I live in northern Minnesota, we're only 14% of the population, but we are a key part of the population, and part of what is going to fix this country's problems is for urban and rural people to start communicating, start figuring out what we want, what we have in common, and how to get there. And the special interests who control the country, they don't really care. They've got plenty of money. They already eat organic food. They already...
They want more. They want more money.
They want more. And we've got to throw a wrench in that machine and change things. And food, I love food and farming as an issue that can bring people together. And once we realize that a situation like this catastrophe of COVID-19 we've had, this would not have been nearly as bad if we hadn't been subjected to poisoned food and a poisoned environment for the last, five decades in this country. And I think we can change that, but it's going to take real people have to stand up for what they believe, and they've got to ally with people. Farmers and ranchers want to do the right thing, but they can't do it without consumers helping them, and we've got to force politicians and the retailers to change their behavior so that we get what we need in this country and we get through this crazy period now where the elite have turned people against one another, and they've got us, concerned about issues that are secondary, whereas the real issues are right in front of our eyes if we'll open them up.
How realistic is it to make this kind of change, Ronnie?
I think it's possible. I think we're going to have a couple of rough years here. I mean, people can barely talk to each other, these days. It's like
without screaming.
Yeah, and people have just been traumatized and made so fearful that, I mean, damn, you can't even shake hands with someone anymore or see what kind of expressions on their face or whatever. It's become it's like a science fiction movie. So we're gonna move out of this, and we got to come to grips with what just happened over the last year. My most recent book, which just came out, is called The Truth About COVID-19. But I want us to get back to the topic of the book that it came out last year, Grassroots Rising. We can solve these health, climate, environmental problems. This is not a Republican issue. It's not a Democratic issue. It's an issue of, for all humankind, and for our kids, You know, I mean, what do our kids think of what's going on in this country? You know, what do they think about the future?
I think they're scared.
Yeah, my son tells me, Dad, look, he said, you know, all my friends, they know about the climate crisis. They know things are serious. He said, the problem is, Dad, they don't believe things can change, you know, and that's why they're not as engaged as they should be, you know, and I just find that.
Well, and I can understand how they feel that way.
Yes, exactly.
Let's take some calls here for you, Ronnie. Let's start with Mike in Denver talking about the young people. No, he's not ready yet. Let's go to Jason in Fairwood, Washington. Jason, go ahead.
Hey, Ronnie. It's really interesting hearing you talk. I just wanted to know if you thought there was any correlation, you know, between eating certain foods and just kind of, you know, living out our lives the way that we do with the, you know, sicknesses that we have.
Oh, there's no question, Jason, that you are what you eat. Would you agree, Ronnie?
Yes, indeed. I mean, you know, nutritionists tell us that 80% of our the chronic diseases in America are caused by our food system, you know, and it's, you know, food should be a joyful thing. When I grew up on my grandparents' farm in East Texas, you know, it was a wonderful life, you know, and it's like, it's very hard to be a family farmer anymore. It's very hard for urban consumers to be able to afford the kind of food that they need to be eating. It's hard to find the time to, you know, to cook and to have the time to cook and, you know, have the whole family sit down for dinner like we always did, me growing up, or you invited other members of your family together. You know, things are out of control. And one good thing about COVID, I do think, I mean, yes, there's been an increase in sales of healthier foods. People have been cooking more at home. People have improved their cooking skills. There have been more family meals. I mean, it's been rough to be for everyone to be on top of everyone all the time, but we can keep going in that direction, and I believe we will.
I think so too. David, Columbus, Ohio, take it away, Dave.
Oh, George, Ron, it's really an interesting topic. I live here in Ohio, and we raise Angus cattle, but they are on the open range, but we're only miles away from these mega farms, and if a person from a city could only see this, I see it all the time. They keep their hogs, their livestock in these small pens, and I mean they don't feed them the natural foods like your guest talks about. Our cattle, Angus here, are on the bluegrass. They eat it. They're healthy. But you look at these mega farms, and we'll see these, and I mean not only is it unhealthy for the animals, it's also bad for the air pollution. You're talking 20-acre barns where they keep enormous amounts of hogs and cattle. And I heard your guest talk about that, which I've seen firsthand. And most of these farms are not even local people. They're mostly owned from people out of the country,
India, that's right,
and different areas, and
China.
I'll hang up and hear what your guests have to say, George, and keep up the good work.
How much foreign ownership is out there with our farm systems, Ronnie?
Well, there's quite a bit. There's going to be even more. China's buying up farmland all over the world. They haven't bought up as much in the U.S. As they would like to do, but you got people like, I mean, Bill Gates is one of the biggest farmland owners in the United States, and Jeff Bezos from Amazon. I mean, these West Coast, you know, Silicon Valley billionaires, they're starting to say things like, "Oh, we don't need people like David from Columbus, Ohio. We don't need you know, livestock management. We can have genetically engineered fake meat made in laboratories, and that's what people should be eating." And it's pretty sad that it's come to this. But I think we can turn things around. In rural America, people are sick and tired of the pollution from these factory farms. you know, and we're starting to see action. And I want to live in a rural area. Oh, I want everyone to live in a rural area like where I live in northern Minnesota, where you can still swim in the rivers. You can still swim in the lakes. You know, you can still drink the water from the springs. You know, when you get down to southern Minnesota, it's more and more like Iowa, factory farms. You know, you can drive in Iowa. I drove last year on my book tour 150 miles, and I didn't see one animal outside. They're all in these, you know, concentration camps for animals, you know. And when you look out the window, well, everything's just corn and soybeans, you know, acre after acre after acre. Well, I mean, that's not for human food. That's for the food. That's for the animals.
That's for the animals.
Up in the factory farms. We can't both have clean water and clean air and a healthy environment and factory farming. It's one of the others. And I think we're going to move away from factory farm and junk food, over the next few years. And we have to.
What do you think of this genetically modified fish? They call it Frankenfish and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, it's horrible. It's on top of the fact that it's a factory farmed fish already. You know, most of the salmon that you see in restaurants, you know, if you ask them, hey, is this wild salmon, or is this, you know, farmed? Well, you know, it turns out 90% of the
time it's
farmed, at least in the rest of the country. The West Coast gets some, but these genetically engineered fish. They've genetically engineered an eel together with a fish, and, you know, it's everything wrong with factory-farmed fish, plus now you're eating something humans have never eaten before that's definitely not going to be good for your health. And poll after poll has shown that consumers don't want this, fishermen don't want this, you know, supermarkets don't want this, but it's happening anyway, and you look at, well, who's behind this? Well, it's the same old Silicon Valley genetic engineer elitists who think that that they can force us to eat whatever they tell us.
We take texts and tweets, Ronnie, and Tom's got one for you. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, Ronnie, this is from Kelly in San Antonio. She says, not sure if you talked about it, but what do you think of the Impossible Burgers being sold at fast food places? They say it's not meat.
Yeah, well, the Impossible Burger is you know, a toxic lab food that is, you know, not nearly as nutritious as
they tell us
they make it
is.
Out to be, yeah. And it's bad for your health. And the thing is, it's like if people don't want to eat, if they don't want to eat meat, or they don't want to eat meat as much as they do now, yeah, you can have a healthy organic veggie burger. That's fine, but these things are not plant-based foods as they say they are. Impossible Burger, Beyond Burger, you know, these are genetically engineered lab constructs, you know, that were thought up by scientists in a laboratory. And these people like Bill Gates, they're coming right out and saying it that. They don't think that ranchers should that there should be any more ranchers. You know, that we can eat lab meat instead. So I wouldn't eat that stuff if you paid me.
Nor would I. Jeez.
And it's just more of the same high tech, you know, nonsense that's coming down the pike. It's like eat poison food and. Don't worry about it, because we'll have some big pharma drugs for you, or vaccines that'll fix everything.
Walter in Pennsylvania is with us. Go ahead, Walt.
Hi, George. Mr. Cummins sounds a lot like Mr. Schmidt the other night you had when I commented about the Roundup. Now, George, with all due respect, I think the one thing we take for granted in this country is cheap and plentiful food now. With all due respect to Mr. Cummins, he talks about the factory farms. And, George, I've been involved with farming, and I have a big – I don't farm anymore, but I have a big garden up here in the back. And just because a farm is large and and very efficient and grows a lot of crops or animals, it doesn't necessarily mean it's bad. With all due respect, you talk about the way they raise hogs in these little pens and that. Well, George, one thing I learned about pigs and hogs is that two things they like to do in life, sleep and eat. George, you can't, as Mr. Cummins said, you can't equate raising animals with the Holocaust, with Auschwitz. A factory farm is not Auschwitz. And, with all due respect to Mr. Cummins, he sounds like he might be a member of PETA.
Well, go ahead, Ronnie, you have the floor.
Well, I raise pigs and chickens and cows and goats and sheep, and I just think there's a way to do it, pasture raised is what we call it, that really works and that I really like. I love these animals, just because we have to sacrifice them in order to, survive, if we're carnivores, it doesn't mean that they can't have the best life that they possibly can. So I think it's true. There can be big farms. I mean, my friend has 12,000 acres and she has, 600 cows. But it's the way that you manage a big farm or a big ranch that I think, really matters. And, it is important to have food that's affordable, like Walt said. But affordable doesn't mean low nutrition, and it doesn't mean, feeding omnivores a bunch of grain to where what comes out on the other end is not healthy.
Do they still pay farmers not to grow crops like they used to?
Yeah, in certain cases, but basically nowadays most of the taxpayer subsidies are going into the insurance, getting your crop insurance. So you get crop insurance even if you're farming in a way that's screwing up the environment.
In case you have a drought or something and they all die.
Farms, and, it's like no one in their right mind would go along for that. And most of the farmers doing that, they don't feel good about it. They're just saying, I got to survive. And this is the only way I can survive. So we have to create opportunities to where they can do the right thing and still make a decent living.
What about corn for ethanol? Is that still happening?
Yeah, it's still happening. It's on 48 million acres of U.S. cropland, and it's, it takes more energy to produce the ethanol than you save by burning the ethanol in your car instead of, gasoline. So it's an insane system, but it's really hard. The politicians in the Midwest, no one will say anything about ethanol. The farmers are desperate. They'd rather get some money for their
something.
Corn.
Yeah.
But what we need to do is help, especially the young people in the rural areas in the Midwest. They understand the shortcomings of industrial agriculture and factory farms. A lot of them want to change, and if we will help provide opportunities for those young people, they're going to farm, in a different way as their parents, retire. And there's a whole generation about to retire, and there's a new generation coming up that are much more open to.
We're going to need that, Ronnie. We're going to come back and take final calls with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, first-time guest Christy Whitman joins us as we talk about manifesting and making things happen by just concentrating. I'm looking forward to that. We'll come back with final calls in a moment with Ronnie Cummins as we talk about his work, Grassroots Rising on Coast to Coast. And welcome back to Coast, our final segment with Ronnie Cummins, his book, Grassroots Rising. Where do people get your book, Ronnie?
You can get it on the Internet at Chelsea Green Publishing, or Amazon, or you can get it in your local bookstore.
All right. You ready for more calls as we wrap it up? Let's go to Bill, truck driving in Wisconsin, east of the Rockies. Hi, Bill. Thanks for calling.
Hey, great message and everything, but it's just not practical in my opinion. I mean, I'm an over-the-road truck driver. I've been doing it for 30 years, and the majority of the population's around the two coastlines. I mean, I don't know if he's ever been, if your guest has ever been up 95 through New York, but Co-op City, you could actually count people per square feet. You know, I mean, it's the whole city farm, you know, the country farm life and all that. Love it. Wished I could live it, all the rest of that. But at the end of the day, you know, and I'm a vegan, so I only eat whole food, plant-based foods, but that's really not the point. But I do go through the meat aisle, and I look and I see meat sitting there for $20, $25 a pound.
Oh, my God.
And this is factory processed foods in major grocery stores. I got, you know, my two main customers are Purdue and Smithfield, right? So I haul tons and tons of pounds of pork and chicken. I mean, what's the price point that the people can afford to pay? I mean, grass-fed beef, I don't know what it costs, you know, per pound to walk in and buy a steak, so to speak, you know, in the grocery store, and it be that type of quality meat that your guest is talking about. But it's got to be extremely expensive, and I don't know about you, but $20 bill's still a lot of money to me.
It sure
and
is.
I couldn't see, I know, 4-ounce little piece of meat, I guess, is about all you could afford to eat at any one time at that kind of price. And, you know, there's so many people that don't make any money in this country. How are they going to eat? The reason why the factory farms survive is because they're trying to feed
the masses.
Population, a huge population of people.
What do you think of that, Ronnie?
Well, several things there. The true cost of healthy food should be the cost that it takes to pay the farmer or the rancher and the workers in the food chain to do it right. I think everyone would agree with that in principle. And the problem right now is that we're paying money out in healthcare that we could, you know, give them healthy food instead of doing that. Like, I think there should be free healthy food for kids in schools. I think there should be free healthy food for people in nursing homes, people who are on Medicaid and Medicare. That would pay for itself by reduced healthcare costs and, you know, better performance in school, healthier population. You know, it's not going to cost the consumer anything because we should be providing that food right now. We have, you know, food stamp programs. We have, you know, free lunches for kids at school, but those are ridiculous. They're junk food. They don't reach everyone. They're not getting the job done. So that's part of it, and we have to put more money in people's pockets, you know? I mean, I think most people in the country would agree that, you know, minimum wage, federal minimum wage, $7.25 an hour, give me a break. You know, you can't even eat junk food for that. So
that's two gallons of gasoline.
Yeah, we got to raise the incomes of people, but we also on the thing about meat and eating factory farm cheap meat. The average American eats 222 pounds of meat a year. You know, you talk to any nutritionist, any natural health doctor, they'd say that's about three times as much meat as you should be eating for optimum health. So people should eat less meat, but it should be the good meat and the animal products. And, of course, we're going to have to regain our cooking skills and eat at home instead of eating out. And, you know, like Bill, if he has to drive a truck, you know, that long hours, hard work, how do you find time, you know, to, you know, cook for yourself, to, you know, budget your food and so on. These are all big problems. They're not going to be solved easily. But we can't just sit back and say that factory farms are the norm in America, and therefore we're just going to accept that. At least I don't believe that we can do that. But this is going to take big change, not little change.
And it'll be slow, though, won't it, Ronnie? It won't come fast.
It's going to take a while. It's going to take a while. It's taken 40 years, 50 years, 60 years to move from a traditional family farm system to what we have now. And we're going to have to, you know, it's going to take decades to move that. But the time to start is today. especially for people's health. I mean,
well, that's critical.
Are we gonna just keep going through these years like the last year we've gone through? You know, I don't think that we can do that. And now's the time. Take control of your health. Take control of your diet. Figure out how you can exist under this. And let's start raising heck with the politicians, the policymakers, and make these changes. You know, it's just, this is rational behavior. Do we want a livable environment? Do we want a population that's healthy? Do we want farming and ranching to be occupations that young people can actually aspire to? Or we would just want to hand it all over to the Chinese and Silicon Valley and, you know, the laboratories to produce our fake meat and our fake food?
Let's go to Bob in Indiana. Bobby, you're up with us. Go ahead, Bob.
Hey, guys. Thanks very much. I think I have an idea or solution to the part of the problem.
Toss it out.
All the land that is between the highways, the median, the grassy area that separates the highways.
Right.
Why don't we start growing crops and vegetables in that area that's wasted and share it with the people?
It's not a matter, Ronnie, of not having enough land, is it?
No, we need to. It's how we're managing the land. I mean, we got 69 million acres of urban land. We got all this, and I think that's a good idea. I've seen animals grazing on the West Coast in a few areas instead of spraying chemicals, you know, eating the grass and so on. But we need to make farming and ranching an occupation that young people aspire to, where you can make a living at it. And we obviously can't, you know, we can't do that if we don't fix the other parts of the system. I mean, if it costs so much money to pay your rent, it costs so much money for, you know, your health insurance, to send your kids to school, to the taxes, everything else. If there's no money left for people to spend on healthy food, we're not going to be able to change the system. So everything is interconnected, and I think it comes back down to some basic, do we really want to have a society of healthy people, a democracy, or do we just want to hand it over to the special interests and the wealthy to tell us what to do?
That's another text and tweet from you, Tommy. What do you have for us?
Hey, this one in from Carol in Middleton, Idaho. I like to eat canned vegetables. Please ask Mr. Cummins if he thinks that's healthy.
Well, canned vegetables are the nutrition level is not nearly as good as the fresh vegetables, but it's certainly better than eating fast food at the restaurants, though. So it's a trade-off there. But fresh foods, I mean, there's farmers markets everywhere now, and it takes a little effort to get out, but the prices are right. You get to meet the farmers, and I would recommend that you get your vegetables during the growing season directly from the farmers in your region.
Let's go to Janie in Lincoln, Nebraska. Hi, Janie.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
No, you're welcome.
I'm really enjoying your conversation very much with Ronnie. Everything that he's saying, I believe, is 100% correct. If we would all just eat in a healthier way, and that means eating healthier foods than the way they are farmed today, I think we would all be in better shape than we are right now. I grew up in a small town. My grandfather was a depot agent for the Union Pacific, but he loved farming, and so as a hobby on the side, he always had his little tractor and discus with plow and planting all of the stuff, and every year he would buy 6 or 8 little steers, and he would feed them in the pasture all year long until they were fattened up, and then he would sell them, and we'd always have one that he would keep back for us, for the family. And I've never eaten such wonderful beef in my life. I mean, it is beautiful, absolutely beautiful beef. And so I know everything he's talking about is right. I did have a question about Bill Gates' name came up several times in the conversation today. And he is supposed to be the largest holder of farmland and largest owner of farmland in the United States right now. Why is that? Why did he buy so much farmland? What was the idea behind that, do you think?
I think he thinks it's a great investment, Ronnie, don't you?
Yeah, and he has so much money that he can buy in limited amounts. I mean, when you look at it, Bill Gates has now taken control over global health care policies, and I think he's got his sights now set on food. Some of the alarming things he said recently are that, you know, he wants to get rid of ranchers and, you know, livestock on the whole planet, and that, you know, organic food, he said, is no good because it takes too much land, and, you know, that we can have high-tech genetic engineering that will take care of everything we need. I think Bill Gates is an example of a person who's got so much money that it has destroyed his sense of reality.
He doesn't know what to do with it.
He wants to run the world, and he's well on his way there. But I don't think people are going to put up with this too much longer.
At least Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos are dumping their money into space.
Yeah.
Let's go to Joaquin in Houston, Texas. Hello, Joaquin. Thanks for calling.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, thank you.
So I was listening to a show, and I identify a lot. It's been nearly 3 years since I last ate fast food.
Really? That's pretty good discipline.
I thought it was going to be hard, but over time, it's getting easier and easier every day. And it's been maybe about 5 months since I last consumed sugar.
That's pretty good, too. He sounds like he has a pretty good handle on what he's doing, Ronnie.
Yeah.
Joaquin, do you have a question?
No, just a comment.
Okay.
And probably I've heard that if you limit the consumption of meat to 8 ounces per sitting, your liver does an amazing job processing it and breaking down the foods and actually breaking down the fats into nutrition that helps repair the body. So,
what do you know about the amount of meat you eat, Ronnie?
Well, that the average American, like I said, eats 222 pounds of meat a year, which is way too much. And the problem is that this is typically not grass-fed or pastured. This is factory farm meat. So people would do much better to cut back by 50% or more. But purchase meat and animal products that are high quality, because for most people, they're good for you. I mean, I was a vegetarian for many years when I was younger on ethical grounds because I hated factory farms and so on. But finally, you know, I got back in touch with ranchers who were doing it the right way and people who were raising animals the right way. And I went from being an organic farmer that just grew vegetables to, you know, raising animals again. And I've just realized how much I love the animals and how much I enjoy meat and animal products if they're raised the right way.
If everybody just did this within their own families or self, would this tackle most of the problem?
I think that's a good start, you know, and I think because once you make changes in yourself, it spreads out from your family, your friends, the people you work with, the people in your neighborhood, and it's got to go from the grassroots up, all these changes we're talking about. You know, we're not going to, someone in Washington, D.C. is not going to solve these problems for us. We're going to have to solve them ourselves. And I think perhaps because we've gone through, you know, purgatory the last year with this COVID thing, it's cleared up people's minds a little bit, focused them, and I hope we can start out on a new footing now.
We're lucky enough, Ronnie.
Getting over and people can start to think rationally again and say, you know what, I'm not going to go back to the way things were before. You know, I'm going to take control of my life, and we can do it.
All right, my friend, thanks for being on the program. There are some countries that can't even sustain food for their own population. We're lucky. We're trying to decide we've got too much and how we're going to minimize things a little bit. But thanks. Appreciate you being on the program. Up next, let's manifest our lives.